Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Well, this is very exciting. It is Wednesday, January 16, 2019, and this is a brand new program that we are offering to all of you. Perhaps I should say, the beat goes on, my friends. Oh. This is a new little thing that we're doing, and I'm very excited about it. It's the return of the Roundtable. Each and every Wednesday, we will be talking with fellow MMA reporters about the beat, about the sport, about everything that's going on in the sport of mixed martial arts. And as we all know, there's never a dull moment. A lot of things are going on constantly in this sport. I'm very excited about this. I am Ariel Helwani. Thank you so much for watching. We're calling this the MMA Reporters, by the way, because you'll recall many moons ago I said that one of my favorite shows was the Sports Reporters. That show is no longer with us, but I think it's one of the greatest shows of all time. And I think that the business of covering MMA is a fascinating world, and I want to keep this going. So this is the MMA Reporters. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're happy that we are back, and I'm very excited to get things kicked off. All right, let's introduce the panel for this week. I'm being joined to my right. You can't see us, but trust me, he is to my right. He is the longest tenured MMA reporter at this company, Brett Okamoto. I'm right, correct? No one's been here longer than you.
Yeah, well, for a long time, I was the only one.
Yes.
It was a short list.
That's true.
It was a short list.
Brett Okamoto in the house, welcome.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's nice to be here in person. Amazing that you were able to secure a budget to fly me out here every week to record this. That's quite amazing, Ariel.
You know, listen, it's a big time for the company and the sport. It's an important time.
Money is falling from the sky to do these
things. Who would have thought? And yeah. I'm actually going to ask you about that in a quick second, but let me just say hello to my old friend, Jeff Wagenheim, who's also joining us. It has been a while since we talked, Jeff. It's good to see you again. And I can confirm for everyone at home, you are rocking a Hawaiian shirt.
Yes. Even when it's only audio, I still have to like hold true. I would wear a hat too in homage to another old friend, but we'll leave that for another day. Speaking of homages, if this is indeed the MMA Reporters, then I would like you to refer to me as Bob Ryan, and I will bring my voice up to a much higher
Fair
pitch
enough, yes.
for the rest
like,
of the
do
program.
Do whatever you want. It's your world, Jeff. Okay, so obviously this is a very exciting time for the sport. It's obviously an exciting time for all of us who cover the sport at ESPN, because on Saturday it will be the very first UFC on ESPN Plus card. It's TJ Dillashaw versus Henry Cejudo. I'm assuming if you listen to this podcast, you know about the particulars. You know about the details of this card. So let me ask you, Brett. You've been covering the sport for this company for almost a decade. Right? 8-9 years
at
this point?
Yeah, 2011 was the first year I started.
How would you describe your feelings, your thoughts on the Wednesday before the Saturday card after covering the sport here for so long? And let's be honest, ups and downs, right? Sometimes you have to fight for real estate. Sometimes you have to fight for acceptance.
Yeah.
Here you are after being here for so long and now seeing how excited the company is and how big this debut is. This must be a little surreal, is it not?
I would argue that it has to be the most surreal for me of anybody involved in this entire thing. And maybe that's a little biased, and maybe I'm speaking a little too highly of myself right now, or only looking through it from my lens. But for the last 7 years, I mean, if the listeners had any idea, and look, I'm not saying that I was out here and ESPN didn't care about what we were doing, but as far as trying to do different things and trying to relate to them how important some things were and some of the storylines that we did. And part of my job was selling myself and selling our content and asking them to put it up and asking them to invest money into it and send me and a camera crew to go out and do this thing. You know, there were projects where there was no video to go along with it, not because I didn't want there to be video along with it, just because it was not where ESPN's interests were. Now, it's the complete opposite. And the amount of content and the amount of cool stories and breaking news, and I mean, just that must-see moves thing that you saw online that just went out yesterday, that is the type of stuff that I've been asking to do for 7 years, and now ESPN is asking me to do it. So it's like a beautiful, beautiful change.
Did you ever think that this would happen? That ESPN would be the exclusive television home of the UFC in the United States?
I absolutely 100% did not. I did not. Yes, no.
Hey, you gave me a curveball there. I was going to say yes.
Especially because yeah, let's be real. There were some people at this company that just didn't like it for a long time too. And so it's hard to think like, oh yeah, we're going to have UFC on ESPN someday, when you knew that not only were they not interested in it, but they actually disliked it, you know, and the mood has changed.
There are people in every company in the media though, who have demonstrated a dislike for the sport at some level. And, it's funny. I wasn't here, but I thought that ESPN was going to get on board back when they had the MMA Live show. John Anik was hosting for quite some time. And I thought at some point that was going to translate into the next time that UFC rights went up to bid, that ESPN was going to jump in. And of course, it went over to Fox for a while, which was kind of like bringing it up closer to the major leagues, because they were sort of on an outpost of, Fox Sports One, a network that didn't really exist at the time. But now they've really upped the ante a lot. And, to support what Brett's saying, I've been here at the company for the last about 2.5 years, but for most of that time, until just the last few months, I was not working in the MMA side of things. And it just didn't seem like there was a need to bring somebody else over to help out. And even when I did start to do some MMA stuff, it was mostly just filling in. But then shortly thereafter, the announcement came that this was happening. And I will say that I've been here in Bristol today and yesterday, and I got almost no work at all done at my desk, because I've been in constant meetings, talking to this person, talking to that person, mm-hmm. everything getting buttoned down for this Saturday. The amount of commitment that folks here have to the sport, if you're an MMA fan, and I'm sure you are if you're listening to this, you should be really happy to know that the biggest entity in sports media is really behind it right now.
Yeah, so
how does it compare for you, Ariel, to Fox?
Oh my God, it's drastically different.
Is it?
It really is. And you know what's so interesting is, and it's a great question, because I was there for the launch, mm-hmm. right? So I see the way both are being launched on these new entities. The amount of resources that ESPN is giving and investing in this sport compared to what Fox did is night and day. Fox really, as you said, they used the UFC to launch FS1, and for a while they used it to prop up Fuel TV.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really invest all that much else in it. You know, they didn't hire a ton of people for the website. They had one other show that was UFC Tonight. That was just an hour. Here, there's so many more resources, so much more programming.
They were
so
a platform
much
more than a partner, right?
Absolutely. And look, of course,
In their defense, at the time that Fox took the sport over, the sport was in a way different place. There was no Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, all those players that elevated the sport into a really a crossover thing, that where people who, my friends, the people in my generation who are huge sports fans, they didn't really care about the sport at all. They kind of looked at it the way that John McCain used to think about it. Just kind of like, why would you be interested in that stuff? But folks like Rousey and then McGregor just brought things to a different level, where people who I marvel when I see people who I've known for decades, and they'll ask me, how's that Conor McGregor coming along? And it's like, wow, you guys are interested now. And so I think the sport has ended up in a whole different place. And that's one of the things that's kind of exciting about being here, because ESPN obviously can give it a huge platform. And the sport has kind of grown to a place where I think it can fill that huge platform.
So when the UFC went to Fox, I think a lot of us viewed it as a graduation of sorts, like, okay, they've gone from cable TV to now Fox Broadcasting Corporation, and this was going to be a big deal, and there'll be household names and whatnot. The deal is over, and we're moving now to the ESPN era. I don't think that really happened, right? Like, I don't think that the Fox deal turned out the way they thought it was going. Is anyone a Fox creation in this sport? Like, they put DJ on Fox cards at least 3 times. They put Benson Henderson a bunch of times. Like, no one, I think, really benefited from the Fox partnership. Do you agree? And this is no knock on Fox. I just don't think it turned out the way they thought it would.
No, I mean, to what you're speaking of, no. Like, Fox was not a star creator, if that's what you're saying.
But I think they thought and wanted it to be.
Right, right.
Did
so
they not?
In that regard, it fell short.
Yeah.
But I think just in general, I mean, just having a presence on a network like FS1, which... at least it's one that you would see in a bar, and it was just kind of put in front of you more, mm-hmm. right? I think that's certainly felt more professional. It felt like a graduation from Spike, right? So I think just the overall sentiment and the overall feeling towards MMA as like, oh, this is kind of like on the Spike channel. The sport grew up a little bit on Fox's airwaves, but no, it did not turn into this thing where it just started to generate and build a ton of guys. Like that part of it was never there.
Let me just finish my thought before you jump in, because I want to say that I feel already, and I don't feel like I'm being biased here, like seeing Henry Cejudo on First Take feels like what they wanted to happen with Fox is happening already. Like you already start to see the dividends being paid off for this deal. Having these guys go on shows like that or PTI or having them on SportsCenter, to me, will start to actually create stars. Like I keep walking past TVs and there's another UFC highlight. There's another interview. TJ Dillashaw's on SportsCenter. This is big. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for, like I'm the newest one in the company, right, who's covering the sport. And for me, it's like, it still feels like, I can't believe ESPN actually cares about MMA after all these years. And I really feel like the fighters are actually going to, they are going to experience the biggest difference in all of this. They are going to become stars. And I think what they thought was going to happen with Fox is actually going to happen this time around. That was that was basically where what I was getting at there.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to add was that I thought that the thing that, the biggest star maker aspect of that era at Fox for the fighters was not what happened with the gloves on, but what happened when those guys were doing what we're doing right now, talking into a microphone.
Right. I mean, that's a good point.
I mean, we always knew that Dominic Cruz was a brilliant guy inside the cage, mm-hmm. but who knew that he was even more brilliant in front of a microphone? I mean, he can analyze a fight in ways that just, you know, astound me. You know, Daniel Cormier, huge personality, not just, you know, his athletic achievements, you know, speak for themselves, but the personality that he conveys, I mean, he is as good as anybody in kind of exuding that, Michael Strahan, Terry Bradshaw, like kind of like that guy that's kind of a fun guy just to sit and listen to, you know, aside from the fact that he really knows the sport, but he just has that kind of that kind of personality. So these guys, I think that was where some of the, these guys really made advances, the ones who actually, you know, joined the other side.
That's a great point. Mm-hmm. You're actually 100% right because those roles didn't exist in the Spike era. So then let me ask you guys about the debut because I think a lot of people are probably listening to this now. It's like, oh, are we going to get 60 minutes of fawning over the UFC coming to ESPN?
And the answer is yes.
Well, okay, so I'll say this. I feel like this card falls short a little bit. When I heard that the UFC was coming to ESPN and was starting on January 19th, I was like, wow, what are they going to do, right? They had the heavyweight title for the first Fox card, right? This is going to be something special for the first ESPN card, regardless if it's ESPN 1, 2, plus, news, I don't care. The first one, you got to come out strong. The main event is great, right? It's phenomenal. They're not big draws, but for the hardcores, I think we love this fight.
Yeah.
The rest is a little thin, right? I think it could have been better. And I think, especially with the cancellation of 233, which was supposed to happen next week, they had an opportunity to make it better. And so I don't want to say I'm disappointed because the main event is awesome and it's pay-per-view worthy, but I do feel like it's a thin card and it's not the card that I was expecting. Am I crazy here,
Jeff?
Well, I'm just going to say that I heard you earlier today. I think it was on with Stephen A. and Max, and you were talking about how surprised you were that Greg Hardy is in the co-main event. And I was just sitting there shaking my head thinking, this is the whole reason that guy exists is to be in co-main events. I mean, it's about being a big name athlete from a mainstream sport. And yeah, of course he's got a lot of reasons to dislike him. But that was my take is that he's,
do you agree with the decision to put him in the co-main
event?
From the UFC's perspective.
I think the idea of him even being here is, I mean, as I've said on many occasions, published and unpublished. I've written on a couple of occasions about stuff that I don't think the guy belongs in the UFC, and I certainly didn't think he belonged on a card that also had a woman who was involved in a domestic assault case. I think that was, as a lot of people have used the term, tone deaf, and I think that's a really good term for it. However, from the UFC's perspective, and you know, frankly, I have to speak truthfully, you know, even from ESPN's perspective, ESPN is trying to sell subscriptions to ESPN Plus, and one of the ways to do that is to put two champions in the main event. But as you said, they're not the hugest names in the sport. But you get a guy who was a Pro Bowl defensive end who was essentially banished from the NFL. People are going to want to see him either go in there and do something or maybe go in there and get beat up. You know, and there are going to be some casual sports fans who may not even know how great Cejudo and Dillashaw are, and they might just sign on just because they want to see this guy.
Yeah, look, the card could be better. Could be deeper. Of course it could. If you're a hardcore fan and you're looking at this card, like, I've seen better cards. You know, and this is the launch. I mean, you can definitely make that argument. I'm okay with it. Because we have 42 events to fill this year,
right?
You know, and as you both know, Timing plays a whole big role in this, and there were some circumstances with several guys that they wanted to get on the card, that didn't want to be on the card, or they couldn't be on the card because of injuries or whatever. I mean, I think that there were options explored that ultimately were not seen on this card. But I think I actually kind of like the way it works out, especially with the main event, because I love that Henry Cejudo and TJ Dillashaw are getting the rub that they're getting right now, because you knew that ESPN was going to blow out from a promotional standpoint and a coverage standpoint, whatever the main event was. And I'm legitimately happy for a guy like Henry Cejudo, who fights at 125 pounds, happy for a guy like TJ Dillashaw, who lost his title in a very close decision to Dominic Cruz and had to wait 2 years to get a rematch. I mean, this is kind of making up for some of those things. And when I was having some conversations with managers and fighters, you know, months ago, this question got brought up of like, well, how important is it to be on the first ESPN card? It's cool, but, you know, would we rather be on a pay-per-view? Would we rather be on this or that? And I think at least for the main event, like these guys are getting value out of this. I mean, this was very, very cool and very, very real, the value that they are pulling from being the main event on this card. And I'm happy to see it go to the two that it's going to.
How do you feel about Greg Hardy being on the debut card?
Look, at the end of the day, like I don't care about my personal feelings about Greg Hardy being in the sport anymore. Like I kind of feel like that's an irrelevant question at this point, because everybody knows now what Greg, well, I mean, we don't know exactly what happened, but we know the story, right? And some people have thoughts on it. Some people have different thoughts on it, and those aren't going to change. So we could sit around here and talk about like whether it's right or wrong, but at the end of the day, we're just talking in circles. I mean, this is just, it's a polarizing topic, right? Right. I'm more interested in now, because of who he is and because of the way in which they're using him, man, he's being rushed. I mean, but he's also got a lot of natural talent. I mean, from a sporting perspective, I am intrigued to see how he does. I will say that. But as far as like trying to speak to, okay, look, I don't think he should be the co-main event. I think that's almost kind of disrespectful to some, to guys who have been fighting for longer than a year, you know? Right. But as far as, my personal feeling towards him as an athlete, I'm interested. I want to see how he does. I do.
And so I agree with you. Like, the train has left the station on Greg Hardy, the MMA fighter.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a reality for quite some time. You could have talked about this when he went on the Contender Series. He has three pro fights under his belt, let alone three amateur fights as well. So I don't think that that's the big question anymore. To me, it was just the two-parter afterwards. It was, A, putting him on the debut, because,
yes,
look, you're doing interviews, you're writing. We shouldn't be spending this much time talking about Greg Hardy. He's not a mixed martial arts fighter. He's trying to become one, but let's be honest. If the St. Louis, or they're not the St. Louis Rams anymore, the LA Rams or the Dallas Cowboys or the Buffalo Bills called him today, he wants to go back to the NFL. He can't go back to the NFL, so he's doing this. God bless you. You're trying to make a living. But I don't believe that if the UFC ESPN deal was starting in 2019, let's say it was starting in 2020, I don't believe he's in the UFC this quickly. They're expedited him.
Yeah.
So I think it almost bums me out that we have to talk about him. We should be celebrating the fact that the UFC finally made it to ESPN, that Disney is in the MMA business. We don't need to be talking about Greg Hardy, and I feel like this was forced, and it shouldn't have happened. And I also feel like, part two, after knowing what happened to Rachel Ostovich, you shouldn't have done that. That was a tone-deaf decision.
That part was terrible. That part, tone-deaf almost doesn't go far enough to describe that. I mean, it's just a bad decision. It's just in bad taste. But I want to give Jeff an opportunity, because he was saying earlier, which surprised you, and I think it surprised me too, that you were kind of saying that you understand that putting him in the co-main event and that you get it.
Yeah, that did surprise me.
And what kind of, like, if that fight were lower in the card, do you think that the overall interest in this card as a whole would be lower, because we wouldn't be talking about him as much, or he wouldn't be in the co-main event?
Well, I think that what I'm really talking about is him being on the ESPN Plus, the part of the card where you have to have Plus in order to watch him.
Right.
It couldn't be the co-main. It could be, there's six fights on that main card, so it could have been the first fight in the main card. In fact, maybe that would have even been better. Would have solved both those problems. But I guess my point is, I'm never, you know, I had almost the opposite opinion that you do, that I'm still really pissed off that this guy has this platform, that he's, and I feel like I also agree with you, Errol, that it's unfortunate that we have to talk about the guy, but it would be a disservice to not talk about the fact that he's in, you know, on this card and in a fight. However, setting all that aside for a moment and saying, okay, he's there, I feel like in any fight card, the placement of fighters is promotion, is advertising, is trying to, is the TV business. It's not really, I don't look at it as the fight business. If someone I know that there used to be a time when the UFC always, if they had two title fights, they'd always have the heavier fighters, heavier champion defend would be in the main event, and then the lighter champion would be lower. There was a kind of a hierarchy that was followed, and I've kind of lost that and feel like, well, the promotion has kind of gone away from that, and I feel like it's just, you know, how are you going to sell tickets? How are you going to sell pay-per-views? Or in this case, how are you going to get people to sign up for ESPN Plus? That's really what the placement of these fights really comes down to.
What do you make of the way he handles it all from a PR perspective? Because let's be honest, when you look at him in the cage, he is a frightening fellow, right? Like, he just has this look on his face and you're like, whoa. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. Given his past, it sort of makes you feel a little uncomfortable, right? I mean, this man, I think he calls himself the Prince of War. I mean, the whole thing just at times makes your skin crawl a little bit. And then it never feels, at least to me, and I think you were there, right, when he won Contender Series in Las Vegas. So were you in that scrum?
Yeah.
He obviously, look, he's done the interviews about it, and I think he doesn't want to keep rehashing it, and there is something to that.
Yeah.
But it never feels when he's talking, at least from my perspective, and I'm not face-to-face with him. I think tomorrow we'll have an opportunity to see him face-to-face at the media day. It never feels like there is compassion when he speaks about trying to turn a new page, trying to be a different person, or understanding why people feel a certain way. And try, like, I look on his Instagram and there's a lot of things about the haters and things like that. Like, do you really not get why people feel the way they do about you? And sometimes I feel like when you try to fight fire with fire in these cases from a PR perspective, it doesn't work. Maybe sitting down and being a little more, I don't know, and I'm not his PR manager and I, like, he doesn't have to listen to me, but just trying to take off the journalist hat for a second. I want to hear something from them. Like, yeah, you do feel bad about what happened. Clearly something has happened in your past. You had issues. You're not in the NFL anymore. I want to feel like you feel something here, and I never feel that out of him.
No, you don't. You don't. But, I mean, at this point, when are you going to? I think.
I don't know if ever.
I'm speculating here, man. Yeah. So I don't know. But I would imagine that he, when he felt he addressed it, and then you know how these guys are, and you know how people are in those types of situations. They're like, okay, I'm done with it now. I've addressed it. I am moving on with my life. I don't care if other people do, you know? And I, as an individual, or I, as a PR manager, might tell him to think slightly different, that, you know, hey, I get that you moved on past from this, and that for you, it's healthy to just kind of like separate that. And now it's like, you don't need to address it anymore. You don't need to go back there, but maybe for the, you know, your own sake, you should, and maybe here's a way in which to do it. I mean, if I was his PR guy, that's what I would be telling him. But at this point, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, I mean, he's had opportunities. And so this is just how it is. And that, I think you're right. It infuriates people more. And I think a lot of people feel what you're feeling, but it ain't going to happen with Greg Hardy. I guess he's just the villain. And as long as he's in this sport, that's what's going to be the pull to him.
Yeah. And, you know, look, in his past, we know we've gone over his past with a fine tooth comb. And we know that he has not expressed any kind of remorse, at least publicly, that I've known of. And that's the kind of thing that probably played a role in him being banished from the NFL. The NFL has a different kind of an image that, you know, when the video comes out of Ray Rice, suddenly that guy is gone forever. The NFL has a different way of looking at things. Combat sports, hey, who's the greatest boxer of our generation? Floyd Mayweather. How many times was he convicted of domestic violence? More than one. I don't remember the number, but it certainly was multiple times he was convicted. And he would say things like, where are the pictures? Where are the pictures? Well, in Hardy's case, you know, a website published, I think, 4 dozen photographs of the woman who accused him of domestic violence. And he was originally convicted. And then, of course, after having a civil settlement with her, she disappeared and was not able to be available to prosecutors to participate in the appeal. And the appeal then resulted in him having his case thrown out. So, you know, he walks around as in the legal system as an innocent man. But, you know, those of us who have seen all these stories and seen the photographs and heard the stories about this, we have maybe a little different opinion about it.
Do you think that the conversations eventually stop? Because that's right. And I want to make it clear that I get, we should always bring it up. I do feel that way. And there are fans out there who say, oh no, you can't always bring it up. No, I think that it is important to bring it up because it is an issue. It's an important issue just culturally. And it's also been in his past. And I don't think we should just sweep it under the rug. Of course, you know, but then it's like, you know, in a situation like this, then you're talking about it more. And it's like, well, what do we really have to say? Like, I guess I just don't have much more to say about it. The UFC has made its decision. He's fighting in it. And so now I just don't really get.
Well, just because
the appeal
they made that
of just debating over and over, like whether it's right or wrong. Like,
well, just
I,
because
to
they
me,
made
I'm
the
just
decision.
Like, well, it happened.
Yeah, but fair enough. But you could say that with anything, right? Like, you could say, like, oh, what's the point in debating, you know, if Colby Covington got screwed? They made the decision, right? Yeah. I mean, you could say that about every decision that
but
they
make.
But
it's a conversation that changes. It kind of feels like at this point we're having the same conversation about Greg Hardy every time.
You know what, though? I think one
you're
of
not
going to
change anybody's mind.
The fact that it doesn't change in some ways makes that conversation relevant on an ongoing basis. And the example I would give is you got, you know, Hardy who, you know, has his past and he comes across even now in a very surly kind of way. And so in a way, as you said, Ariel, it kind of like makes you think about that past a lot more directly. But then you look at some other fighters, you know, I think of a guy like Rumble Johnson who had himself convicted of domestic violence. But whenever I would either talk to him or see him in interviews, he just seems like such a nice, gentlemanly guy. And so somehow or other, despite the fact that he has this past, I think a lot of people are able to move past it because it looks, you see him and you think, this is a guy that seems like whatever happened, but now he seems to be a kind of a nice guy. I mean, whether that's just a facade or not, I don't know, but I think sometimes appearances make a big difference. Hmm. And I think that's one of the ways in which Hardy's kind of surly manner is going to come back and haunt him for a long time.
And so let's end on this as far as Greg Hardy is concerned, and it comes back to our jobs. Because to your point, I often get this when I go on Twitter, and I know Twitter isn't the best sort of, you know, litmus test, but it's there and you read it on your phone. I do get a lot of fans who say, stop talking about this. I'm tired. You're beating a dead horse. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about his past. I don't want to hear about the Ostovic angle and all of this. Enough. I am surprised by that, but I do get it. And I get two things. First of all, I get that a lot of fans do not know who Greg Hardy is, or maybe weren't fans of football when he was a massive story in that sport. So to them, it's like, okay, a guy in the past, like my brain sort of works in who is doing what in MMA, and that happened 4 years ago, and I don't really care anymore. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of fans just don't care and don't want, because I'm getting that more often than not. And it's to the point where I start to question myself, like, am I beating this? I feel like I haven't talked about it enough. And now I'm starting to think like maybe I've talked about it too much. I get the sense from fans that they want us to stop talking about it. And at the end of the day, who are we serving? We're serving the fans, right?
Yeah.
Do you get that impression as well?
Yeah. And I can agree with it. I'm fine with having conversations about this, but I don't want it to be the same conversation every time. And I will say that, you know, as I'm writing stories about Greg Hardy, as it continues, I will probably continue to include that. I will write that in almost in every story that I ever write about Greg Hardy, because I think it is part of the story. I know it is. It's part of the story. It's why he's here. He'd be in the NFL if this hadn't happened. So it's relevant. And so you add it every single time because it's fact and it's part of his story. And we should absolutely be talking about the Ostovich situation because that is current and it's new and it's something that you should have opinions on. And it is good discussion. What I don't see any value in, and I think this is maybe what fans are saying, is that don't have the same conversation every time. And that I can agree with.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, I mean, I wrote something back in July when Hardy was signed. I wrote something more recently that we didn't publish because it just took a long time to get the thing right, and we ended up not using it. But back in July, we did publish something that was pretty critical of the UFC and critical of Hardy. And the blowback I got left me convinced that there are people that, yeah, as you say, Errol, maybe there are people who just didn't know much about his past, don't know. Also, he ultimately ended up not being found innocent. You know, that's the legal system found that way. And there are people who like to just, you know, point that out. But frankly, I hate to say it, but I think there are a lot of men out there who don't care about domestic violence unless it happens to their own sister. And until that happens to someone they care about, someone they love, it's somebody else's problem. Mm-hmm. And I just want to see the guy fight. I think there's that element of people out there. Yeah, that's disturbing to me, but it is what it is.
Let's go back to the main event. True or false, Brett? The flyweight division is on the line Saturday night. Henry Cejudo loses, it's gone. Henry Cejudo wins, it remains.
Long-term, false. Long-term, I think the division is gone either way. Now, if Henry wins, I mean, look, I think if then they get in a negotiation room, right? They get in a negotiation. I don't think Henry Cejudo is opposed to going to 135. I mean, we know that the guy's a big flyweight. I mean, after his last fight, he mentioned going up to TJ Dillashaw, did he not? I mean, he wasn't saying, TJ, come down to me. He was saying, I'll go up. He's willing to do that. But he feels like, hey, if I'm going up and I'm dropping my belt or you know, the flyweight division is going, then I want my situation to change. You know, and the UFC is saying, well, what's really changed? I mean, you're getting a title shot. I mean, it's the same fight. You know, we don't need to redo it. So I think that if he wins, all that repeats itself. You know, they go in, they talk about his situation. And if they feel like Henry Cejudo is a good investment and they do feel like they need to redo his deal and they're, okay, now we're going to, the best thing that could happen for Henry Cejudo, I believe, is he wins the fight, but it's not just this one-sided thing. There's some drama in it. People are kind of thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind seeing that again. And now he's like, he's got the win over the Bantamweight champion. People are interested in seeing him fight a second time. I think that would be a perfect case scenario for Henry Cejudo. And if that happened, I think the flyweight division would be gone. So, Frank, to answer your question, long term, a year from now, I don't think the flyweight division is going to exist. But if Henry Cejudo wins on Saturday, I think there's a chance it could exist 6 months from now and we could see another flyweight fight.
But if he loses, it's done?
I think it's
Sunday
done.
Sunday, it's done?
I think it's done, yeah, if he loses.
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I'm not close enough I'm not talking to people in the sport as like Brett is. I'm not that close to the situation. I mean, I read what I read, and it seems like that makes sense. I guess I would just think about the personalities involved. And I think that for a guy like Henry Cejudo, if he wins his fight, it won't just be a situation of money and I can become richer by moving up. There's going to be something in his core that tells him that he's the real bantamweight champ. I mean, I just beat the guy that's the bantamweight champ. I know he had to be 10 pounds lighter to come and fight me, but I saw that guy across the cage. He's the guy that has the bantamweight belt. I just went out there and beat him. And I think that that's going to make Cejudo, it's going to embolden him to want to go right up there and get his belt. I think that he's going to look at it that way. He's going to say, I beat the guy. I think there are going to be a lot of fans who are going to say, they're not going to think about the fact that Dillashaw had to empty every ounce of water out of his body in order to step on the scale. They're going to look at that fight, and if it turns out that Cejudo gets his hand raised at the end, especially if it's a finish or something where it's a pretty decisive victory, I think there are going to be people who are going to look at Dillashaw as a diminished champion, and they're going to look at Cejudo as the guy who ostensibly is an uncrowned bantamweight champion.
Don't you think it would be a huge mistake to get rid of the division if he wins? Let's say we're wrong and he wins on Saturday, Henry wins on Saturday, and they say, okay, we're still getting rid of it. It's done, right?
Yeah.
I find him to be incredibly entertaining in the cage and out. I enjoy talking to him. I think he's getting a lot better with his interviews. He's marketable. He speaks three languages. He's a freaking Olympic gold medalist, right? How many times can they say that? They've had some silver medalists, some bronze medalists, some Olympians, but gold medalists, this is a very big deal. He beat the winningest champion of all time. And if he beats TJ Dillashaw, that's a major feather in his cap. I don't want to get rid of him. I don't mind seeing a rematch against Joseph Benavidez at 125. Their first fight was phenomenal, and there are other guys coming up as well. Why? I don't understand the insistence. Now, all of a sudden, you have gotten rid of the DJ problem. He's gone. You didn't see eye to eye. You didn't do good business with him. He's gone. Henry has an opportunity to be one of the faces of the UFC, in my opinion. I think Henry is potentially more marketable than some of their current champions, right? Mm-hmm. As far as doing interviews, he's certainly a lot more entertaining. So why give... Like, why do this? I don't understand. Whereas, it's not like they're short on real estate. It's not like they don't have enough cards, right? They just canceled the card.
Yeah.
So you
it's
need
nice
more
to have
champions.
Another. It's nice to have another belt. Yeah.
I don't get it. I honestly don't get it.
Are you of the opinion that if he keeps winning, it just keeps going? Like,
yes.
that literally this is the flyweight division is on the line.
Yes.
You think so?
I really, truly do. Hmm. I really, truly do. In the sense that Chris Cyborg was the featherweight champion, and I think now it's going away. Because she's no longer the champion. They were going to keep that thing as long as she was the champion. Same thing's going to happen at flyweight. And I think that it's pretty darn cool, as Henry and his coach have told me, that people like Joseph Benavidez and other flyweights, Matt Schnell, who never trained with him in the past, have come up to him and said, I want to help you beat TJ because I feel like you're fighting for my job. Like, this isn't some like concocted thing. Now, I understand the UFC can't come out and actually say this because there's people's livelihoods, you know, at stake here. But I really think that when you talk about those stakes, this is one of the most important fights in UFC history. Like, the division has never been on the line before. That's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, I mean, everything that you're saying is certainly possible. Certainly possible. I guess a year is a lot can happen in a year.
Sure. And well, if he loses, then obviously,
but like even if
he loses,
even if
in
he
like
continues
two title
to
fights,
win, I think that they will.
But why?
I mean, so was it almost like what was going on at featherweight then? That it's not a real division, but so they just kind of like have, because they've already let people out of their contracts.
Yeah, but there's still some left, right? Yeah. There's still some names left, and there's the Benavidez fight on this card as well. I'm just so impressed with Cejudo these days. Like, I really feel like he's come into his own. I think he's turned into a well-rounded fighter. I don't want to see him fight at 135. I think he is best suited, even though he's pretty big, best suited at 125. He's figured out the weight cutting. Yeah. He looks to be in phenomenal shape. You see that picture of him that was posted last week? I mean, he looks to be in tip-top shape. I don't get the rush all of a sudden, now that DJ is gone, to get rid of it. It makes no sense to me.
Everything you say makes sense, just like Brett and me. You know, I get it. And I'll say this. I would like what you put laid out. I like that to be the result. I would rather see there being a 125-pound division than there not to be one, just because I think that having the fighters spread out in more divisions is a good thing. Having, you know, I feel like the worst thing that happens in MMA, in my opinion, there's a lot of contenders for the worst thing that happens in MMA, but I'm going to say that the worst thing for me is this whole interim championship thing. Whenever they put out an interim belt on the line, I feel like they should make it out of plastic or something. It should be like one of the little, you know, we have like a fake UFC belt in our office, and I sort of feel like they should hand out that or something, like a little toy belt, because they really don't respect it. And the reason they don't respect it is because it's not real. I mean, I think when I was writing these stories, I would always refer to so-and-so won the faux, you know, welterweight belt or whatever. And that was the way I felt about it. So the reason they have to do that is because they want title fights all the time. And the reason they have to do that and instead of putting another title on the line is because all the champions aren't always available. So how do you avoid that predicament? Well, you have more champions. I love the idea of the 165-pound division. You know, 155, 165, 175, 185. Maybe it's just the mathematician to me. It just sounds more linear. It sounds like it makes sense to me. But I like that idea. There are a lot of good fighters. I think that nobody could beat Demetrius Johnson at 125. And I think there's a possible result where a very diminished TJ Dillashaw goes in there and loses to Henry Cejudo, and it still does not elevate Henry to some kind of star status where he towers above all the other 125ers. I think you could see a situation where Benavidez has already beaten him. I could see Benavidez going in there again and beating him. I could see some of the other guys competing with him on a pretty strong level. So I would love to see 125 continue. But you know what? Like people like you, Brett, you know, you're around the sport a lot closer than I am. You're talking to people a lot more than I do. And I've heard other folks say the same thing, that this thing is it's on the verge of being shoved off the cliff, and I'm just waiting for it to happen.
But for the record, I mean, if it was up to me, I would want to see him stay. Of course, I think flyweights are fascinating, and they should find out what they have with Henry Cejudo. You know, I mean, if he goes out and he beats TJ Dillashaw, that's a huge win. He was great on all ESPN's platforms. I mean, I watched him on Get Up with Greeny, and it's like, what do you have that TJ Dillashaw doesn't have? And he had a great answer. He's like, I got looks. I got, you know, this and that. I mean, he had great one-liners. He's very, very good on camera, I think. But I don't think that's what the UFC is going to do. I think that it's almost easier for them to just bite the bullet. If Henry wins, set up an immediate rematch, which will probably get criticized a little bit. But
at 135?
Set up a rematch at 135.
Oh man.
You sell the storyline of TJ Dillashaw was too drawn out. Because to Jeff's point, what do you do with TJ Dillashaw? He's still the champion. So you've kind of compromised that division as well. So I think it'd be easier for them to just say, we're gonna turn around, we're gonna run it back, we're gonna new weight. You know, TJ Dillashaw is not going to be depleted. We're gonna see the real TJ Dillashaw in this fight, and then they don't have to deal with the flyweight division anymore because they don't want to deal with it anyway. I think that's the most likely outcome.
What do you say to Marlon Moraes and Rafael Sunsal and the returning Dominic Cruz at some point?
What did
really?
They tell Colby Covington?
Oh my god.
I mean, there's so many people that have been.
That gives me a headache, that scenario. I mean, could you
feasible?
Imagine?
Plausible though?
Absolutely in this day and age, but holy smokes. Could you imagine if that actually happens? The bantamweights might just go, I don't know, that's like, they'll go on strike or something. How do you explain it to them?
I don't see that as people being wrong on the same level as some other situation we've seen. And I feel like if you're a champion of another weight class and you end up jumping in front of the queue in order to get a title shot in a different weight class, you know, you've got like kind of like your little special ticket because you have your championship belt. There are a few other people who I would say qualify in the same way. I mean, George St. Pierre jumping ahead of the middleweight queue, he was a legend in his weight class and he didn't retire, but he walked away from the sport as the champion. So, you know, he was a de facto champion when he challenged for that weight class. But the UFC has on many occasions promised something to one person and given it to somebody else. Colby Covington, Miesha Tate, are the two that come to mind for me. There have been numerous other ones. So I don't think that the 135ers are going to would cry if
yeah, they will.
They will cry. Okay, but I don't know if they would have the strongest case.
They are already pissed off. And by the way, just because something happened in the past doesn't mean it's okay for it to happen.
Oh,
what do you
man,
tell your children?
You.
Two wrongs don't make a right. Come
you're
on.
A parent. You're a better parent than I am then.
I mean, no, I do not want to see that happen. I want to see, actually, I want to see the era of the champs go away.
Or at least slow down a little bit.
Oh, man. Between UFC, I was just looking at this earlier, between UFC 1 and UFC 204, there was one, you know, champ fight, right? Yep. BJ Penn versus George St. Pierre. Between 205 and now, there's been four.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
And just the dual champs. You remember when in forever we'd be like, BJ Penn, Randy Couture, the only guys to ever do it. Now I need to kind of take a second to remember all of them. And that shouldn't be the case.
It feels like lazy matchmaking. Like I'll never forget talking to Sean Shelby way back in the day. At the time, he was the lower weight class matchmaker when Joe Silva was still around. He told me, my job is not to create champions, it's to create contenders. That's my job. And to me, when you do these fights, not only is it lazy, but you're also bastardizing your other events because you're now canceling out multiple divisions and you need those divisions for future pay-per-views and main events. I want to see less of it. Like when I hear, you know, Bang say like, oh, 145. When I hear Woodley say 185, like, no, I like the era of long reigning champions, GSP, Anderson Silva, Demetrius Johnson, not that long. That's what I like. That's cool. Stipe Miocic didn't last long, but that was cool.
I'll admit it, though. Can I admit something? I'd be okay if TJ went to 145 only because...
Oh, my God. If he wins at 125?
Well, yeah, of course.
Okay,
of course.
Yeah.
But only because it's never been done before. I mean, the champ-champ thing is overdone, but the champ-champ-champ thing...
Until someone can get four belts. No, but actually, to your point, that's what I was thinking about. Is I remember when McGregor did this. You know, it was a huge thing, not just because it was Conor McGregor, but because this is something that had not happened. Mm-hmm. But now it just happens like so frequently. I was just talking to somebody, you know, here in the company who, you know, as we're ramping up for this big fight card on Saturday, there are people who, you know, haven't really followed the sport as closely. And we talked to them about different things. And someone said, oh yeah, well, it's two champions facing each other. And I said, well, that's actually happened, you know, before. If we really want to sell this fight in a unique way, we could say, well, no champion has ever dropped down to another person's weight class and tried to compete. So that's the uniqueness of this Saturday's fight. But the fact that it's two champions, no. And I don't know that I want to see TJ go from 135 down to 125, then up to 145. That sounds like a kind of crash diet that I would put myself on and not very healthy. But if he does that, then we're going to be waiting for the first four division simultaneous
champ. Oh, I'm sure. And there'll be somebody every bantamweight listening to this now hates me.
Somebody will own every single title from flyweight up to heavyweight, and that'll be the end of the whole thing right there.
Yeah. So, of course, this is all a moot point if TJ Dillashaw doesn't make weight. You have spent some time with him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any concerns on this Wednesday afternoon that he is not going to make weight?
I mean, you always have to have a concern, right? But here's what TJ has on his side. Two big things. I do think that Sam Calavita, now whether or not you believe that Sam Calavita is his strength and conditioning coach, but more so his mad scientist that has come up with these algorithms, and he's a former aerospace engineer who has come up with this formula to get these guys down to weight. And everything that he's told me and informed me, I mean, he told me, Sam did, that they're cutting less weight for this fight. They're cutting less water weight the week of the fight than they did for 135, which seems crazy to me and impossible. But he's got that kind of mind on his side, I guess. The type of guy who will diabolically go over every little detail. That can't be a bad thing, right? And TJ has it on his side that he is a complete maniac, dude. He is insane. When I watch this guy work out right next to other professional fighters, there's something different about what he does. I mean, he is so dedicated. He is one of the most dedicated professional athletes I have ever been around. So if anybody can do it, I think it's him. My money is on he makes weight this week.
We are going to have a really cool photo feature coming up later in the week. We have embedded a photographer with TJ's camp. And we're going to be doing that. I'm not sure exactly when it publishes, but we'll obviously after weigh-ins. And then I think we'll even follow TJ a little bit during the rehydration process and all that. And I actually, before we started doing this this afternoon, I was in a meeting and someone showed me some of the preliminary photos, and he looks, you know, lean and mean. He doesn't look like, he doesn't have that, like, you know, remember when Conor McGregor would step on the scale 145 pounds and he looked like a skeleton? You know, because he was so drawn out. And then, of course, the next night he'd come out there and look pretty good. But, well, you know, TJ is not at that point. Obviously, he's not at the point yet where he has to do the water weight. But he's looking very lean, and doesn't look like there's a lot of extra anything on him. But some pretty cool photos. So I would just say to look out for that later in the week.
Does he look healthy?
I mean, does any fighter ever look healthy during when they're in the process of preparing for a fight? I don't know. He doesn't look. I've seen worse. I'll put it that way. I've seen fighters who, and I'm not talking about just on the day of a weigh-in where you see someone practically need to be helped onto the scale. You know, I've definitely seen some people that look like they were very, very unhealthy. He doesn't look that way. He looked like some of the photos were of him, you know, in pretty heavy workouts. So he's clearly, you know, he's clearly not depleted to the point of compromising his training and his preparation.
I would say his physical look does look different though.
Yeah.
When I was in Los Angeles, I went to his house and I was standing outside waiting for him to open his garage door, and the garage door went up and I saw him for the first time. I was like, dude, you look different. You just looks like a kind of a different guy. I think, like,
in what way?
I think it's maybe just everybody would, I mean, weight cutting is going to affect the physical look of different people differently, obviously, but his face looks gone. I mean, it does. It doesn't look like the sucked out thing like Jeff is talking about.
Like,
I think it will.
Ago.
I think it will when he gets on the scale.
Yeah.
But it's just, he gets bony, man. I mean, the guy's face is just, to Jeff's point, where is this weight going to come off, TJ? Where is it going to come off? But it's all in the formulas.
Yeah, because he's one of the leanest 135ers, right? Like, dude, when he weighs in at 135, just imagine an extra 10 pounds.
He's always lean.
Yeah, yeah,
it's always
lean.
Like,
in
it's
general.
Like some like 8% body fat or some
he started,
very low number.
He signed the contract, or at least agreed to the fight, 12 weeks ago. 12 weeks from the day of the fight, he weighed 154 pounds with 8% body fat. 154 pounds, 8% body fat, 12 weeks. And then don't forget, he's supposed to have 13 weeks, but they moved it up.
Yeah, yeah.
They moved it up because it was supposed to be in California.
Yeah. Good on him for accepting that, because I think a lot of people would say, I need that extra week, right?
TJ's crazy, man.
Okay, so you're on the record, Brett, that he is going to make weight. That's your prediction.
Yes.
Jeff?
I mean, I haven't been there. All I can rely on
What's
is the
your
photos.
Gut say,
the
Jeff?
Photos. My gut says I'm
Don't
hungry. My gut says I'm not going to make weight. You know that for.
Yeah.
My gut says that he will because he's a professional and an elite athlete, and he's not a guy who I've seen have any problems in the past. You know what? Henry Cejudo has missed weight before.
Yeah.
So wouldn't that be the irony if Cejudo's the guy that doesn't make it?
That's the kind of thing that happened. It would happen in this sport.
Yeah. Oh, seriously. After all the talk. Okay. So I'll go on the record as well. My prediction is he makes weight, but let's just say he doesn't make weight.
Yeah.
I want to give Henry and his team a piece of advice, and it's kind of playing off something that they told me earlier this week. Do not weigh in first. Wait till he weighs in. If he misses weight, then you come. But the key is, you can't, let's say Henry comes in, excuse me, TJ comes in at 126.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Then you come in. You cannot come in at 125, because if you come in at 125, it's not a bantamweight eligible title fight. If he comes in at 126, come in at 127, come in at 128, and then ask for his belt, and then the tables turn, right?
Oh, yeah.
Could you imagine that? I feel like that could happen. So for those that don't understand,
Ariel, has the WWE contacted you to write their stuff? They must have reached out at several points. Like,
this would be great.
I'm not sure what I like more. Reading your stuff, Brett, about the actual fights that happened, or listening to you talk about fights that, the events that haven't actually happened, they may never happen, but they're just so brilliantly concocted.
We all love theater. 126 to 135 is a bantamweight title fight, right? Mm-hmm. 116 to 125 is a flyweight title fight. So you have to weigh in at 125 for it to be a flyweight title fight. If he misses weight by half a pound, by a pound, by 2 pounds, Henry just chill, weigh in after, and say, I want his belt. I don't want to cancel this fight. I don't want to fight Joseph Benavidez. I just want to fight for his belt. You win. Because let's be honest, in this scenario, Henry's losing out, right? TJ loses on Saturday. He's still a champion. Henry loses. Not only is he not a champion, his division might be gone as well. Turn the tables on them.
I love it. I hate to poke holes in it.
Okay.
But what happens, so let's say Cejudo is on weight at 9 a.m., sits around, waits for 2 hours, because you know that TJ's not coming down early if he's heavy.
Yeah.
Let's say TJ misses. He's got an hour.
Yeah.
He's got an hour to do it.
I know. That's where it gets tricky.
Yeah.
Because then he has to weigh in as well. Okay, so how about this? Okay. Great point.
So he comes in slightly above.
Yes, and he takes that hour. So let's say TJ comes in at 10:59. At 126, he gets an hour, to your point. Okay, if I'm Henry, I come in at 10:59 and a half, 126. Now, I know it's not that easy to flex
Henry
the numbers.
Henry better be on top of his weight to execute this plan.
I know, but could you imagine if
he better be on point?
Oh, my God. That's why I'm so happy we're doing the official weigh-in show on ESPN+, by the way, because I feel like there's going to be some gamesmanship here. Unless TJ just comes in first, and then all the theater is just down the toilet.
Yeah.
If all this happens, it's going to compromise your whisper. Your very famous whisper. It may raise up to the point where
people
hear
you. I hate when they come first. Because then there's no more intrigue.
Yeah.
Like, just let it, you know, remember like a couple months ago when Connor came in like an hour into the thing, it was like, oh, is he going to miss weight? What's going to happen? That's great. Mm-hmm. That's good theater.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think I don't think there's anything in the rule book that says they can't do that. Just change the fight, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm all in.
All right. That's good. So should I go back to my office and change all the things about flyweight championship to bantamweight?
Not yet.
I won't publish those yet, but I'll get them all prepared.
Well, he gets prepared.
He'll be ready for Saturday.
Well, I don't want to seem like there's some funky business going on here, but I'm just throwing it out as an opportunity for maybe to turn the tables on them if you're Henry Cejudo. Okay.
That's great advice, by the way, to Henry's team. You know what a piece of advice I would have given TJ's team?
Yeah.
Don't talk about Max Holloway before the fight. Don't even mention it. In fact, when you get questions about it, when you say like, hey, because you know you're going to get that question, right? You know you're going to get the question of, hey, you're moving down to 125. Would you ever be interested in moving up to 145? Go for a third belt, you know? What if he was like, no, man, I'm good. You know, Max Holloway is a beast. Like, look how big that guy is. He'd outweigh me by 30 pounds. Like, I'm set here. You know, two belts is good enough. Like, what more do I got to do to do a legacy? And then just do a complete flip. After you beat Henry, you're in the cage. Be like, Max Holloway, I'm coming for you, because then the drop is huge. Now we're kind of talking about Max Holloway, and then if he calls him out and he wins the fight, he calls him out, then it's like, okay, we were kind of expecting it. What if he had said, adamantly denied, no, I could never fight Max Holloway. He's just too big.
Yeah. Look at you, Brett. You're going for that WWE job too, man. The two of you guys are going to be like, you know, running the show over there.
It's not WWE. It's just having a little imagination, a little fun. This is the toy department, right? You're supposed to have fun.
No, it's part of the sport.
Yeah. It is. It really is.
As part of the sport is the jab.
It all is. The psychological side of it is great. And yeah.
Let's end on this, because right before we recorded, you broke the news that Darren Till will be headlining the March 16th card in London against Jorge Masvidal. Also on that card, Gunnar Nelson versus Leon Edwards. If I'm Leon Edwards, I'm probably annoyed because I wanted that Darren Till fight.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, we reported that Wonder Boy Thompson is going to be fighting Anthony Pettis, who's moving up to 170. So there's three interesting 170 fights that were just added. A division that has been in focus as of late because of the Kamaru Usman, Tyron Woodley, and Colby Covington love triangle, if you will.
Yeah.
Of those two main events that are happening 2 weeks apart, which one do you like better?
Which one do I like?
Wonder Boy Thompson and Anthony Pettis, or the Till Masvidal fight?
Good question.
Which one intrigues you more?
Till Masvidal.
Why?
I think part of it is because Till is in London, so right off the bat, that's intrigue there. But I also, I would say of those four, I'm just. In general, most intrigued by Till because he's the youngest, and I think that he was, you know, rushed in some sense into that fight with Tyron Woodley. I anticipate him still having a great career. I have more And this is nothing against any of those other guys, but they're just a little older. They're further along in their careers. I don't know what Darren Till is going to end up being. You know, I don't think Anthony Pettis is going to be a welterweight champion. I think he's a heck of a fighter. And I think he, like, the fights that this guy is accepting is absolutely insane. And I think Stephen Thompson could be a welterweight champion. He's not done yet by any stretch of imagination, but I just really don't know what Darren Till is going to be. Is he going to find that home at welterweight? Has he figured out the weight cut? Is that his longtime home? Is he going to turn into a middleweight? Is he going to fight Robert Whittaker somewhere? I have a lot of questions about Darren Till, you know, that I guess I don't have about those other guys. So I would say I'm most intrigued by that.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by Till also specifically because of what happened in his last fight. You know, when a guy who comes in undefeated, mm-hmm. not only loses, but gets stopped and gets stopped by a guy who's, you know, most people think of the champ as a wrestler. I know he's got the big heavy hands, but think of it as they probably thought that if the fight was ended by one guy knocking another one down, they were probably thinking that it was going to be Till taking him down as opposed to Woodley literally taking him down like a wrestler would and beating him up on the ground. That wasn't what happened. Woodley hit him, knocked him down, choked him out. And I would like to know, for Darren Till, what is that going to mean for him? Is he going to go out there? Is he going to be a little bit of a different fighter? Sometimes these guys, after they take their first loss, that next fight is a little bit interesting to watch.
For
and
sure.
And in this case, he's going to be getting a guy who is not timid. You know, Masvidal is a guy who's going to step forward and is going to bring a fight. And so I think that's going to be an interesting thing. I'll watch both. In fact, yeah. I'll watch all three, but that's the one that I'm really
intrigued
by.
Okay, that's a great point, because I think actually all three are super intriguing fights.
Oh, they're awesome.
Like, I don't really understand why Pettis is doing this other than he's sort of in purgatory. He's coming off the loss to Ferguson, so why the heck not? Mm-hmm. Wonderboy's not getting a title shot as long as Woodley's champion, so why the heck not for both of them? So it's fun, but I don't really love it for Pettis. I love the Leon Edwards Gunnar Nelson fight.
Yeah.
Edwards is on a roll. This is a bit of a step up in terms of, I don't know, test, if you will. But let's not forget, it happened so long ago that it feels a long time ago. But he is coming off a win over Donald Cerrone. So I think that's a nice little feather in his cap. That was a main event fight in Singapore. So I love that fight as a co-main.
Yep.
To me, the Darren Till fight is only intriguing because I don't like that he's staying at 170. I thought that, okay, you lost to Woodley. I agree with you. It was too soon. Take this opportunity to test the waters at 185. See how you feel. See how you perform. See how your body feels. Those weight cuts are scary for that guy. And Masvidal's tough. He's been out for a long time, but he's a game fighter, right? You know, pardon the pun, his nickname is Game Bread. I wish he would have used this opportunity like Pettis, but for different reasons. Test the waters. See how you're feeling. What's the one thing we really learned in MMA last year? Guys who fight closer to their natural weight actually are doing better, right? Ask DC, ask Sage Northcutt. The list goes on and on. I don't like this for him. I wish he would take the opportunity to fight at 185 and see how he feels.
I agree. I agree. I'm trying to put myself in his head. And maybe once you make that move up to middleweight, it's going to be real tough to ever go back down if you ever wanted to. And maybe he's thinking, what, you know, if there's a shakeup at the top of welterweight, I mean, he's right there. He's always going to be right there. So I don't know. Maybe that's just his only hesitation, is that once he moves up, it doesn't have to be permanent. But I just... And we could get a fighter on here to talk about it, but just in my mind, I would not want to move up a weight class and then try to think about going back down. I would want to save that move until I felt it was permanent.
Mm. Yeah, I'm worried. I keep thinking about that one weight cut prior to that fight against Wonderboy Thompson, where he looked little. I mean, we talk about weight cut on this show with TJ Dillashaw. He looked like he was going to die.
Well, right. I missed Dallas. So what was the talk around? What was the look about?
There was so much pressure on him, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that he really focused on it. He did everything possible to make sure he didn't miss weight. It was a title fight. But that fight against Wonderboy just a couple of months prior was scary. Remember he had that video and then he took it down?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Super scary. So I don't want to see that happening. Of course, weight cutting going to be a big story all week long with the TJ Dillashaw fight. That was just sort of on my mind when I saw your report. Guys, this has been a lot of fun, right?
Yeah.
It just kind of flew by.
I was mesmerized by Jeff's shirt for about the first 15 minutes, so
tremendous.
I can't be
shirt.
Held accountable for anything I said. But once I got used
shirt.
To it, then I felt like I was myself.
Unfortunately,
again.
There's no video component, but I feel like people have seen you in enough Hawaiian shirts that they can take Brett's word and and trust that it is a great shirt.
And it's like 28 degrees outside.
I do have a face for radio, though. I've got to say that, so...
Well, I hope this is the start of something very fun and exciting for all of us. I love talking with fellow reporters about this great sport, about covering the sport, about all the storylines, about all the fights. And I hope that it's the start of a very fun era in the history of this sport, the UFC on ESPN era that officially kicks off Saturday night in Brooklyn, New York. Brett, Appreciate it, my man. Jeff, appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks so much for listening to all of you out there. Check this out every Wednesday. It's on the same feed, so you don't have to go anywhere else. It's right there for you. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next week. Enjoy the fights this weekend.